ice hit the outer shell and broke one of the superconducting wires of the radiation shield. Then we'd have to go outside and fix it. It would be a relief from the boredom. I miss you. I know we fought when I had to leave and it was all my fault. I can see that now. I've made a mess of everything. The only thing I hope for is that I haven't made a mess of your life too, Katrina. You deserve a good life with a man who loves you and can give you good, healthy kids. Me, I'm here in this fancy Siberia forever. It's not bad, really. I'm a free man, as free as you can be in this glorified tin can. I even ran for political office. Can you imagine? Me! I lost, of course, but it was a different experience, let me tell you. I miss you. I know it's too late, but I want you to know that I love you, dear Katrina. I'm sorry I ruined our lives. 26 December 2095, morning. Malcolm Eberle had worked hard to reach his lofty position as Goddard's chief administrator. Plucked from an Austrian prison cell on the promise that he would set up a fundamentalist government to rule the habitat's 10,000 souls, he had outmaneuvered the murdering zealots who'd been sent to keep watch over him, and now he stood at the head of the habitat's administration, admired and respected. Truth to tell, most of the habitat's population didn't give a damn about their own government so long as no one bothered them with rules and regulations. They had been picked from the dissatisfied, disaffected freethinkers, men and women who had run afoul of the authoritarian fundamentalist regimes of Earth. They were dissidents, idealists, troublemakers. Now they were more than a billion kilometers away from Earth, and for the most part, both they and the Earthside politicians felt better for it. "But they admire me," Eberle told himself as he strolled down from the center of Athens to the lovely little lake at the village's edge on his morning constitutional. "They voted for me, overwhelmingly. As long as I don't saddle them with too many restrictions, they ought to keep on voting for me." That business a few days ago with Pancho Lane troubled him, though. She certainly surprised me. Eberle touched his jaw where Pancho had hit him. It still felt slightly swollen, but the teeth weren't loose, thank goodness. The people are all buzzing about it. Pancho Lane knocked down the chief administrator, and he just laughed it off. Does it make me look noble, forgiving, or weak and cowardly? He ambled once around the lake, passing people afoot or on electro bikes. They all gave him respectful hellos or smiled their greetings at him. He nodded and smiled back automatically. Normally he would bask in their admiration. But this morning his mind was on Pancho Lane. Why did she come here? A woman of her wealth and power doesn't travel to the edge of civilization merely to see her sister. She could talk to Holly electronically any time she wishes. There must be something more to it. There's got to be. He barely noticed that the sunlight didn't seem as bright as usual as he finished his morning's walk and started up the slight rise of Athens's main street, heading for the administration headquarters at the top of the hill. Once in his office, he leaned back in his desk chair and steepled his fingers before his face, considering this new aspect of his situation. What are Pancho's intentions? Does she plan to stay in this habitat indefinitely? Will she apply for citizenship? She was the CEO of a huge corporation until she retired. What if she's come to take control of this habitat? Will she run against me in next year's election? Could she throw me out of office? His face clenching into a worried scowl, Eberle regretted allowing the habitat's constitution to call for elections every year. His original reasoning had been clear enough. Give the population the illusion that they have control over their government by allowing them to vote every year. They'll think their leaders will be responsive to their wishes, because there's always a new election coming up. In actuality, Eberle had figured, the more often they have to vote, the fewer of them will bother. Most of our so-called citizens are lazy and complacent. As long as they don't have any major grievances with their government, they'll allow me to stay in office. And I'll be a good ruler for them. I'll be just and fair. I'll do what is needed. I'll use my power for good, he told himself. Leaning back in his desk chair, Everly pictured an endless future of power and happiness. Power brings respect, he knew. After two or three elections, everyone will admire me so much that I'll be able to do away with elections altogether. And with life extension therapies, I can be the head of this habitat indefinitely. Me, Malcolm Everly. They'll all look up to me. They'll have to. But Pancho Lane is a force to be reckoned with, he told himself, simmering resentment, clenching his teeth. She made me look like a fool. That can't go unavenged, unanswered. I've got to deal with her. I've got to get even with her. His decision made, Everly told his computer to display his morning's appointments. The list appeared immediately on the smart wall to his left. He found it easier to read off the flat wall screen than to peer at a three-dimensional image hovering in the air above his desk. The chief of the maintenance department wanted to see him. Frowning, he returned the call. The engineer's image appeared on the wall opposite the appointments list. "We're having a problem with one of the solar mirrors," said Felix Aronson, the maintenance chief. His round, fleshy face looked nettled, more irritated than worried. Something about his complexion seemed different, as if he'd been sunning himself and had acquired a light golden tan. "How can he do his job and have time for sunbathing?" Everly asked himself. Everly did not particularly like Aronson. The man was a paranoid, always full of anxiety. Still, he put a smile on his face as he replied, "A problem?" "One of the mirror segments out of alignment. Not much, but we might have to send a crew outside to set it right again." "So why bother me?" Everly complained to himself. But he kept his smile in place and replied, "If the mirror needs to be fixed, fix it." Stubbornly, the maintenance chief shook his head. "But it shouldn't be out of alignment, man. All the diagnostics check out. Nothing's hit it, and nobody's given a command to shift its position."
"It's a piece of machinery," said Everly. "Machinery doesn't always work the way it should, does it?"
"You don't get it. We've got all the diagnostics and the computer extrapolations, and this shouldn't have happened."
"But it did."
"Yeah, it did,"
Aronson answered sullenly. "Then please fix it and stop bothering me with your responsibilities. I have other things to do." The maintenance chief mumbled an apology and promised to get right on to the problem. "Good," Everly snapped. As soon as the man's face winked off his wall screen, Everly told his phone, "Call Holly Lane. Tell her I want to see her at, he studied his appointments list for a moment, 10:15 this morning." Precisely at 10:15, Holly appeared at his office door, dressed in a sleeveless pale green blouse and darker green slacks that emphasized her long legs, tasteful hints of jewelry at her wrists and earlobes. No tattoos or piercings, Everly noted thankfully. Holly had outgrown those fads. Yet even though she nominally followed the dress code he had set down more than a year ago, her blouse was cut off to reveal her flat midriff. Others did such things, too, he knew. They obeyed the letter of the code, but wore mesh see-throughs or snipped strategic cutouts in their tunics, or wore skin-tight outfits that left little to the imagination.
"You wanted to see me?"
Holly asked from the doorway. Once, when they had first started on the journey to Saturn, she had been like an eager little puppy whenever Everly deigned to notice her. Now she was more adult, more sure of herself, less worshipful. "Have a seat, Holly," Everly said, pointing. She went to the minimalist Scandinavian chrome and leather chair before his immaculately clear desk and perched on its front 6 centimeters.
"I got a meeting in 15 minutes, Holly informed him. "Water allotment committee."
"This won't take long. I was just wondering about your sister."
Holly frowned. "I'm sorry Pancho socked you. She can be a real wrecking crew sometimes."
"Tell me about it," Everly said ruefully, rubbing his jaw. An uncomfortable silence stretched between them for several moments. Then Holly asked,
"So what do you want to know about Ponch?"
Everly hesitated a heartbeat. "Why is she here? Does she intend to stay, or will she return to Earth?" Shrugging, Holly replied,
She says she came here to spend the